Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and today we are going to talk about scabs and ashtrays, as the title suggests. So first, a bit of trivia. In modern commercial airliners, like a Boeing 737 or an Airbus 321 or whatever you happen to be flying in, if you go into the bathroom, you will see something very surprising. At least it's surprising to me that it's in there, an ashtray. Now, when I grew up, smoking was still allowed on flights, and every armrest had a little ashtray built into it, and people would smoke, and it would be like divided. The back half of the plane was smoking, the front half of the plane was non-smoking. And my parents were both smokers. So we sat in the back of the plane and my parents smoked while we were on the flight, and that was just normal. But smoking has been banned on aircraft for a long time. You know, for most of my listeners, I bet most of my listeners don't remember a time when you could smoke on an airplane. And it's for good reason. You know, first of all, there's only so much air in there, and it's already bad enough you got to deal with everybody's germs, but the smell is a problem, you know, and air quality. But then there's also the problem of fire. And so if something catches on fire on an airplane, that can be catastrophic. I don't know that ever brought down an aircraft. Maybe it has. I know fire, like, brought down the Hindenburg, but that was different. That was a static. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The moral of the story is there's no smoking on airplanes, and there hasn't been for ages. So why is there an ashtray in the bathroom? Well, it turns out there's a very good reason for that. It is because people go into the bathroom and smoke. They're not supposed to, and it violates Federal Aviation Administration regulations, but they do it anyway. And so what the powers that be have realized is, hey, we have to acknowledge people's human nature. Because if somebody goes in there and lights up a cigarette, and then when they're done with it, they have nowhere to put it, they're going to put it somewhere, and anywhere that they might put it is going to be bad. And it's going to be somewhere where we really don't want it. And so on the off chance that somebody can't help themselves and they smoke, there needs to be somewhere safe to put that cigarette butt so that, you know, they don't make the plane explode or whatever might happen. I don't know what, you know, but regardless, that's why it's there, is because it's not about the person who's in the bathroom and smoking. It's not a courtesy to that person that, oh, here's a nice place where you can dispose of your butts afterward. It's for the rest of the people on the plane. Because if you put that at, if you try to tuck that cigarette away somewhere where it winds up catching a drapery on fire or who knows what, that's gonna be potentially deadly to everybody on that plane. And so as much as it may be that the person who is in the bathroom is an asshole, we still have to protect that person. And because we're not just protecting them, we're protecting everybody on that plane. So I bring this up as an analogy, and I'm going to give the other half of the analogy. This is from the National Labor Relations Board, and it is titled Right to Fair Representation. You have a right to be represented by your union fairly, in good faith, and without discrimination. Your union has the duty to represent all employees, whether members of this union or not, fairly, in good faith, and without discrimination. This duty applies to virtually every action that a union may take in dealing with an employer as your representative, including collective bargaining, handling grievances, and operating exclusive hiring halls. For example, a union which represents you cannot refuse to process a grievance because you have criticized union officials or because you are not a member of the union. But the duty does not ordinarily apply to rights that workers can enforce independently, such as filing a workers' compensation claim, or to internal union affairs, such as the union's right to discipline members for violating its own rules. All right, so our union, the NALC, which I am a proud member of in good standing, has the exclusive right to represent our members. They are the only ones who can engage in collective bargaining. It's laid out in our collective bargaining agreement. It's laid out, you know, in the founding documents that deal with how we deal with the Postal Service. We, as the NALC, are the sole representative. So whether you're in the union or not, whether you love the union or hate the union, when we finally get that tentative agreement and vote on it, every single city letter carrier is going to be bound by the terms of that collective bargaining agreement. And when we modify work rules, like there will almost certainly be a change to the overtime desired list in the upcoming contract. And whether you are in the union or not, whether you love it or hate it, those new overtime lists are going to be available to you, and you'll have to choose between one or the other. And, you know, the list goes on about anything that the union does, it affects all carriers, whether they're in the union or not. And that's a lot of power. And the union is granted that power by law. We have the force of law that says, hey, whatever the NALC says, whatever agreement they make, that applies to all of you. Whatever pay the NALC negotiates, that's your pay. You can't opt out of that. That's your pay and that's it. So that's a tremendous amount of power in the work lives of everybody who's a city letter carrier. Well, as we learned from Sweet Uncle Ben in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And this statement from the NLRB is about that responsibility, that we have a responsibility to represent everyone, and that includes the scabs. And this is where the analogy comes in, because the smoker on the aircraft, they're breaking the rules. They're doing something that unquestionably they know is wrong. But we have to protect that smoker from themselves, because if we don't, they could wind up taking the whole aircraft down with them. And to stretch this analogy to its limit, the aircraft is the contract. And the scab, of course, is the smoker. And when the scab gets in trouble, we still have an obligation to defend that person because, and steward upon steward will tell you this, we're not necessarily defending the person, we're defending the contract. And that's our obligation as stewards. We have to defend the contract. That's our obligation as a union. We have to defend the contract. And so if somebody is a scab at your station and they get disciplined for stationary events, let's say management decides to do something idiotic and they say, hey, your scanner said you were stationary for 13 minutes, and so we're going to issue you discipline and we're going to take away 13 minutes of pay out of your check for that stationary event. As a union, you're damn right we have to defend that person, and we have to aggressively go after it, because if we let that stand, now we've got the, to use another analogy, the camel's nose under the tent, and they're going to keep pushing in, and this is their opening, that, hey, apparently this is okay. We have to defend our rights under the contract, and we have to defend anybody's rights, whether they're a scab, whether they're an asshole, whether they're an idiot, whether they're just bad at their job, whether they're a bad letter carrier, whatever they are, whatever you think they are, doesn't matter. We have an obligation, a duty to represent them, because we're representing everyone. We're keeping that whole aircraft flying by defending every corner of that contract from all possible incursions. So this is what we must do as union stewards, and this is what you should expect of your union. Now, I gave a speech like this one morning at our morning stand-up at my station, and the next day, I got scolded. I got scolded by our local union president. It was the wildest thing, and I'll never forget what he said to me. I don't think it was word for word, because I don't think that he would phrase it this way. But I got pulled aside and told, hey, don't be trying to hold our union accountable. And like, it was mind-blowing. Like, dude, our union should be the most accountable. Whatever it is that we would expect of management to behave fairly, We should expect that even more so from our own union. Whatever standard we would hold management to with the way they treat carriers, we should hold even more our own union to the way they treat carriers. We should be treating ourselves better and with more respect and with more dignity and with more fairness than we would expect from management. That's the whole idea, that we're in this together. We're a brotherhood. And yeah, you're damn right we should hold ourselves accountable, because we owe it to ourselves to treat each other better than the way management treats us. It's already bad enough that we get this stuff from management, that management craps on us, that management violates our rights, that management does all these things. If our own union is doing it to us, where do we have to turn? What do we have left? There's nothing left. That's it. It's just us. And so we owe it to ourselves. We owe it to each other, to our brothers, our sisters, our siblings, to treat each other with dignity and respect and fairness. And not to mention, it's required by the National Labor Relations Board, but it shouldn't have to be required. You know, when I went to the convention, first day, I was at, it was before the first day, it was on Sunday, and I was looking at the this big board that had all the classes on it, trying to figure out what classes I wanted to take. And I was talking to another carrier, and she gave me, pardon, she gave me some advice. And I said, oh, thank you, miss. And I'm used to just saying miss as a courtesy. It's really common here because there's a big Hispanic culture in Las Vegas, and Hispanic people say miss. And so, oh, thank you, miss. And it's just something I've gotten used to. And she goes, no, it's thank you, sister. And I got to tell you, I never really, it always felt weird to me to call each other brother and sister. But after a couple of days of the convention and seeing all of these people who are, you know, on the same mission as me and pulling on the same rope as me and pulling for each other and helping each other out and educating each other and all this stuff, it kind of clicked. And I felt like, yeah, that's my brother. That's my sister. We're in this together. We're family. And man, you owe it to your family to treat them fairly, to treat them with dignity, to give them the benefit of the doubt, and to do right by them. So, you know, all of this is to say, please, if you're a union officer, if you're a steward, please defend your fellow carriers, if they're scabs or not, if they're assholes or not, because you're not just defending them. You're defending the contract. And the contract is for all of us. Every word of that contract is a concession that we had to fight for management. And if you decide to just let some of that go, then you're disrespecting the people who fought for those concessions, the people who back in the 1970s risked going to jail by going on strike to get those concessions, to get those rights ensconced in our contract. All right, that's my little pep talk for today. Honestly, I've been wanting to, ever since I found out about the ashtrays on airplanes, I've been wanting to use it as an analogy somewhere because I just found it so fascinating. And I finally found the right topic, and it's a perfect fit in season four, because remember, the mission of season four is to learn about our own union and to make sure that we treat each other the way we're supposed to make sure that we do what we're supposed to do right by our brothers and sisters and siblings and treat each other right. And that's obviously my mission here. That's my goal. And I hope you guys are with me. We're going to continue learning more about our own union and about our rights and responsibilities. And you can expect more accountability. Despite what my union president said to me, yes, I do intend to hold the union accountable. And in so much as I'm a member of that union, I fully expect to be held accountable. That is our responsibility. All right, guys, thanks for listening. My little soapbox here. I will catch you next time.